Last week we had the gospel choir come, and that was a real treat to have those guys come. That was really special. But we skipped out a little bit on what our series is on here. We're in the book of Esther, and we're going to pick back up on that here for this week and probably next week. But just a little bit of review of kind of where we have been with this. Esther is an Old Testament book. Written probably hundreds of years before the time of Christ. And just a little bit of the history here, what's going on. The Jewish people, God's chosen people, have been taken out of Israel by a king from Babylon, and they are in what is called now the nation of Persia, or modern-day Iran. And they've been there for quite some time. And they are in this land, and they are... They're away from the promise. They're not back in this land that God has given them to do the thing that God has wanted Israel to do all along. And no doubt they've been there so long, and some of them have prospered well enough, and they've become kind of comfortable. They've settled in there, but yet they are not doing what it is that they were called to do. And that's kind of the initial dilemma that we get here. And that was the first takeaway that we had from this story for us, that we too can get kind of comfortable in our lives and so set in the comforts, especially living in Indiana in this 2018. It's easy to get kind of settled and kind of comfortable and maybe forget the things that we should be doing. We get focused too much perhaps on things that aren't eternal. They're more temporary. And we need to ask those questions. What am I really doing here? What is it that I should be doing in this relatively short time that you and I have here? How am I fitting into God's overall plan? Not unlike what Israel had to be thinking about too. What is it that he wants me and you to do while we're here? And then Esther gets brought into this story. The king of the time of Persia, his name is Xerxes, and he gets all ticked off at his wife because she's being disrespectful, Vashti, and she boots her out of the queendom. That's probably not a word, but she's no longer going to be allowed there. And so they have to search for a new queen. And to do this, the Bible says in Esther chapter 2, the king's servants who attended him said, you know, guy's got no queen here. Let's do something. Said, let beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king. And let the king appoint commissioners in all provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in the citadel of Susa under the custody of Hegai, the king's eunuch. Side note, by the way, I wanted to make sure I knew how to pronounce that name, Hegai. It's Hegai, and he's a eunuch. I think that's kind of funny because, remember, a eunuch is a guy whose manhood has been taken away. The guy's name is Hegai. You know, he wanted to make sure he had it right here. I'm Hegai, the eunuch. Sorry, no extra pay for that. That was just an extra one there. So this Hegai is in charge of all women. Let their cosmetic treatments be given them, and the girl who pleases the king will be queen instead of Vashti. This pleased the king, and he did so. You know, it's kind of a crazy notion here. You'd think about what kind of a culture would do something like this, where, you know, here's a guy seeking, you know, a woman, and so we're going to go get these women all ready cosmetically and in beauty treatments, all this stuff, and then he gets to select one. That just seems so countercultural. Is it really? Doesn't that sound an awful lot like The Bachelor? If you've watched this show before, you know, all these women get dressed up and they go on dates, and the guy gives a rose to the one he's gonna maybe, I don't know how it works, to stay on for a while, and she makes it to the next week's show. You know, so really this is just a follow up from the original version that's actually called The Persian Bachelor, and there's Xerxes. You know, that's what's going on here. You know, all those women were there and they got all decked out, and he selected one. And the one he selects is Esther. Esther, this Jewish woman whose cousin is Mordecai, that has adopted her sort of as a father figure here. So this is where we're at. And our second takeaway here is God's going to find us. He found Esther and he found Mordecai. He finds his people right where they are in the circumstances of life. And he's going to use you right there. You know, no doubt, Jewish people in the land of Persia during this time was not the perfect setup God probably had intended for people. You see how they kind of behave. You know, Xerxes, a warrior, just no respect for life. And here they are parading women around. It's, you know, it's just kind of counter to what God would have people do. But in the midst of that, he's going to work. No different than you and I today. He's going to find us where we are, and he's going to work on our hearts right where we are. So review characters here. We've got kind of the ones that show up here. You've got King Xerxes there. That's another version of him here in the upper right-hand corner. He's the king of Persia. His kind of right-hand man here is Haman. We'll find out he's put in charge of an awful lot of things. Esther, or Hadassah is her Jewish name. She has become the queen in replace of Vashti. And then Mordecai is her cousin. And so the story gets thick here. The plot's going to thicken in this. It's a wonderful story. If you haven't read through this, it's just a good story to read, let alone, you know, the fact that this is in the Bible and the fact that there's just wonderful eternal truths that you can pull out of this. It's just kind of a neat story, probably no doubt why so many movies have been made from this story, because it just follows just a good story. You know, you've got interesting characters in the story, and then the plot thickens. And what happens here is you're going to have a hatred build. You're going to have this conflict happen between a couple of people here. And here's what happens in Esther chapter 3 to sort of introduce this major conflict that happens. So after these things have happened, after Esther has become queen, Xerxes honors Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. So the king elevates this Haman dude to be top dog. And he makes this law that when you see Haman, bow down. You need to pay him respect and pay him honor. That was the law of the time. But Mordecai chooses not to do this. Now, we don't know why. The Bible doesn't say why. Number of reasons, possibly. I'd like to think that maybe Mordecai was honoring his faith. No, he's not in Israel, but he's still an Israelite. He's still a Jew. And he knows that he has these laws that he is supposed to abide by. So I'd like to think that, you know, to bow to another man is some sort of idolatry. And you remember what God says about that early on. You know, I have no other gods before me. Maybe that's why Mordecai wouldn't do this. Maybe that's why he wouldn't bow. But regardless, he chooses not to do it. And Haman doesn't like it. If we go on with the story a few more verses down, when Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, the Jews, he looked for a way to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews, all of them, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. And so that's what's going on here, and he gets this done. Haman is high enough of an official that he gets the king convinced that this is what you're going to do. These guys aren't paying me honor. We got to get rid of these people. So he makes this law. We're going to do genocide. We're going to get rid of all the Jews in your entire kingdom. There's the conflict that is being built. And there again, I think God seems to use people that are found in whatever context they are found, and he'll meet them there. Even though you have this tremendous conflict here in this story, he's going to find them. Even in the middle of this Persian culture that seems weird and it seems counterculture to what God would have us doing, he's going to find himself in their midst to call them and to care for them, to compel them to act the way he would have them act, and to convict them of their sin and to convict them that they should love and honor him. And that's not that different from us, I don't think. I think we, too, live kind of a... This is a strange culture, too, United States, and this year. It is odd as well. This is not the perfect kind of divine culture here. We have things going on in our culture that is different and counter to God's way as well. There's a dominant element in our culture that is centered on greed, money, and on self-centeredness, and our pride, and our lusts. But yet he finds you and me in the midst of that culture, and he loves us, and he cares for us, and he calls us to become more like us. So here we have this. Here is this situation that we want to try to get our context on and get the story here. And we have God's people. that are, they're captive in Persia, in a land that is not their own. And Mordecai sort of stands as a symbolic representation of all of the people of Israel here, and his voice stands out. A leader of Persia named Haman just has this hate about God's people so deep that he wants to exterminate them. And they make this law to go out through all of the land, and on a certain day, like 10 months from this current time, they are just going to exterminate all of the Jews throughout the entire Persian kingdom. And then Esther comes into the picture. She is this young Jewish girl, and has become queen. And her cousin Mordecai asks her to step in. It's time for you to step in and request that this king, Xerxes, would change this edict, this law, that's going to exterminate all of the Jewish people. Simple request. You're a Jew as well. I'm a Jew as well. And your king is asked to kill all the Jews. Step in. Step up and be a queen and do this. So Mordecai sends that message to Esther to do that. And she sends this message back to Mordecai. She says, you know, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he would be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend his golden scepter to him and spare his life. And it's been 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. So essentially what she's saying back is, you know, you just can't go in there anytime you want to. That was her response. Mordecai says, go in there and plead for our life, for our people. And her comeback here is, I can't do this. It's sort of a form of a, I call it a yeah, but. You know, it's this excuse for, you know, here's something is right to do, you should be doing it, and you are compelled and called to do something, and your response is, yeah, but, you know, and you fill in the blank with an excuse. You know, kids, parents, you'll get this a little bit more, you know, parents will tell their kids, you know, before you play Xbox, you gotta go get your chores done. And the kid will come back and say, yeah, but, Timmy's online, I want to play now, or something, you know. You know, here is this thing that you need to do, but, yeah, but I'd rather do this. You should give generously to your church. Yeah, but, sure would like a new truck. Yeah, but. You should love your God and your neighbor as yourself. God says, and I would say, yeah, but do you know my neighbor? No, I wouldn't say that. Jim and Barb aren't here, so they're great neighbors, so. And that was a generalized statement. I don't want to be picking them on or anything. But, you know, we're full of yabbas, and this is sort of, that's sort of Esther doing a, she's sort of doing this yabba. She's been called to do something kind of hard, and I get it. You know, there's sure some consequences for her to do this, because the law she just states, my yabba, and I might die. That was her yabba for her moment here. God calls us to do. And we are to respond. And I think when that happens, I think sometimes we think our lives in some way will be diminished. Oh, I gotta do this God thing and it's gonna make my life not so fulfilling. It's just the opposite. When God calls us to do something, our lives are enriched and they become purposeful. So we go on here to the story here, and Esther has sent this message back to Mordecai and said, you know, young, I don't want to do this, I might get killed. And so Mordecai's reply back is this. When Esther's words were reported back to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. Or another translation there finishes up, the New Revised Standard says, perhaps you have come to royal dignity for such a time as this. I like reading different translations sometimes because I think it gives a little bit different feel here. And so I thought one more feel here we might do that some of you might call here. It's called the translation of street. Do not think that because you be in the Mac Daddy's den, you alone, all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this here time, freedom gots the mosey on way down from another place. But ya and yo daddy's family gots to die, and who knows but that you gots come to royal position for such a time as this here. Know what I'm saying? I thought maybe Southside, since you're a little more street and urban oriented, would probably glean a little bit more from that about what this passage is saying here. The Bible according to street. God uses situations that we are in, and he works behind the scenes to accomplish his will without violating our own will. You are here for such a time as this, Mordecai tells Esther. You are here for such a time as this, to step up and be part of God's plan. There's a sort of a dilemma here that I want to talk about in regards to Esther. You'll read commentaries about Esther, and you'll find, I got a couple of them here I want to share with you about what's happening in this book. Here's one commentator that says this. He says, in the book of Esther, God's name is never mentioned. We talked about that before. That's one of the unique things about Esther. And some people think it shouldn't even be in the Bible because God's not even mentioned. He's not even in here. So what he says here is his name's not mentioned, but you can clearly see the fingerprints of God's sovereignty throughout the book. His sovereignty. That means his supreme power or authority. God has power and authority over this plan, over the mechanics of how life is working out. And this commentator says, you know, you can see his power and his authority over this. Another commentator says this, there may be no clearer example of divine providence in the Bible than the case of the Jewish girl Esther, who became queen of Persia and was God's instrument in the preservation of her nation. The providence of God. Another big word that we don't use that word a whole lot, but we've got sovereignty and providence. Providence is this omniscient or all-knowing directing of the universe and all the affairs of people with just great love. There is this God's hand in moving his plan forward. And so now, I think about those words there. I think about God being sovereign, God being of providence. I think, you know, there's some tension here because how this all plays out. If God is all-knowing and he knows the end results, how all this stuff is going to play out, and he's also all-powerful and he has the supreme power over everything, how is it that we really have choice? God has a will that he wants to get done since the beginning of time, and he's going to bring all this to an end, to a fulfillment. And that plan's going to happen. What's my role in that? How is this all going to happen? What is our choice in this? What about our free will? If we really have a choice, then where does God's providence fit in? If we're choosing, then how is he all-knowing and all-powerful? You see the dilemma there? There kind of is some tension there. God has this plan. He's going to work it all out, but yet he gives you choice. How can we have both of those? How can both of those things coexist? How can there be free will, but then also the all-powerful, all-knowing God whose plans are going to work out? I think the answer, or partial answer, I don't think I'll fully ever understand this, but I think part of it comes from the text we just read. Mordecai says back to Esther, here's what you ought to do, he says. You ought to, queen, go do your queen thing and help us out here. And, you know, she yabuts it a little bit. And he says this, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. If you choose not to do this, it's going to take place another way. Freedom gots to mosey on way down from another place, is what the street version said there. You know, I don't take it as a threat. I don't think he means it in a threat, because I think it's just it really is to me a display of God's awesomeness. I have this plan, God would say. This is what needs to happen. Here's Israel. You're my people. You are my people that is to bring me to the world. Ultimately, you're going to bring me to the world through my son, Jesus. That's 500 years later. People, you've got to stay my people so this can get done. I want you to stay my people. And if I give you an opportunity to participate in this, Mordecai says now, if you don't want to play, I'll find another way. I think that is a wonderful statement that Mordecai says. That just talks about God's awesome love. He's not forcing ourselves on himself on anyone. He invites us to participate. And if we don't want to participate, I'll move on and I will find another way. Esther is in this position of stepping in on behalf of her people to see what she can do to reverse this terrible edict that's going to annihilate all her people. Esther, she is there for such a time as this. She has this opportunity to participate in God's plan, and she does. She does participate in the right way, and we'll learn how more next week about that. But she chooses to be part of his plan. She doesn't reject. She doesn't refuse. She doesn't stay stuck on her yeah, but. She gets up and she moves and acts. God's will is accomplished through the willingness of people. And in this example, Esther for sure. Mordecai no doubt as well. Esther does choose to act. God uses that choice. Mordecai seems to indicate that if she rejected, he would have found another way. I don't think that is a whole lot different than your situation and my situation today. I think you and I are inserted in this context of our time and place, and this is not the Garden of Eden. You know, we kind of think this is the most perfect place ever, you know, United States in this year. It's not. It is not. This is not Eden. This is not utopia. This really is not our homeland. This really is not our promised land, and he invites us to participate in his plan. We, you and I, are here for such a time as this, to participate in his plan. His plan is to be played out, and it will be played out. That plan is about making him known. It is about bringing others to come to him and to have others become his disciples. His plan includes a people that are to love him and to love each other. They're to take care of each other, and they are to urge each other on in their own walk of discipleship. He asks us to participate, I believe, in this every day in subtle ways. It may not seem as significant as Esther's decision to impact a whole nation, but we just don't know the impact we have and how we could affect change in other people's lives by bringing the love of Christ to them every day. And I think we have those opportunities every day to do that. Will we be as bold as Esther? Will we take those stands that she did? Will we take those chances? Will we make those decisions? Will we love those people next to us each day that we are giving the opportunity to? Or will we reject? Or will we refuse? Or will we yeah, but? I believe you and I, we are here for such a time as this to get this kingdom work done. He will find a way to get that done. Will it include you? Let's pray.